a Fueled by Coffee production.
My name is Ben Barrow, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by records. Welcome to the penultimate episode of this season. It's gone quick, hasn't it? I have enjoyed looking at these standards albums, writing about them and listening back to them. I mean, obviously, they're not the best albums. In fact, they are way down the list for me. But it's quite nice to hear Dylan in kind of unfamiliar surroundings, because I don't often listen to these albums. I don't go to them particularly that much. In fact, outside of the first couple of listens, I've barely touched them. So it's kind of nice to hear them, kind of nice to hear Dylan in almost a new album or a less well-known album to you. Anyway, I hope you've been enjoying the episodes. Thank you to everyone that has donated coffees recently. Let's do some name checks as per usual. Hi to Alex Ellison. Hello to Kevin Gee. Nice one for that, mate. Hi to Danny in Vic. Is that Victoria in Australia? Possibly London, I don't know. Anyway, hello to you. Hi to Mo. Thank you for your coffees, mate. Hi to Jim Kessler. Hi to someone's name who is just simply MTTZBKDNF. Probably not a real name, I'm going to go with. Hi to Kenzie, 1975. Thank you for your coffee donation as well. And hi to Jessica too. Thank you so, so much. If you want to donate to the podcast, then the Buy Me a Coffee link is, as usual, in the episode's description. Let's have a look at 2016's Fallen Angels. The first outing in this period felt like an interesting take on the Covers album. Shadows in the Night was a concise, almost conceptual record at times. While to recreate that would be a wrong turn, as 10 songs was enough to take that sound to its limit, here Dylan thankfully varies it a little. However, it's a fool's errand. Bob keeps elements of the Shadows LP whilst adding in other textures along the way. While it would have been wrong to stick with the same sound, by changing it up, we lose its strength of character. Instead of doing something completely new, like a summery brass-laden album, say, or a piano take on these standards, we have a half-and-half record that isn't one thing or the other. The first track sounds so similar to its preceding album that it could almost be an outtake from those sessions. And look, our old friend the pedal steel guitar is back, leading the line as per usual.
Fairy tales can come true, it can happen to you, if you're young at heart.
While this song does stick with the era's well-trodden sonic approach, the lyrics are a little more optimistic. Shadows in the Night often carried a heaviness, a glum melancholy. However, on this opener, Dylan is a little happier. He sings, "And life gets more exciting with each passing day, and love is either in your heart or on its way. Don't you know that it's worth every little treasure on earth to be young at heart? For as rich as you are, it's much better by far to be young at heart." The tune is written by Johnny Richards with lyrics by Carolyn Lee. The song was written and published in 1953, with Lee contributing lyrics to what was originally a Richards instrumental called Moonbeam. Frank Sinatra was the first performer to record the song, which became a million-selling hit in 1953, continuing into 1954, where it reached the number 2 spot on the Billboard charts. It won't surprise you to learn that Bob and Frank's versions share a lot in common, but Dylan's is much more intimate and a less sugary sweet affair. While this opener is still in the same sonic gear as before, as I mentioned, we do depart to new tones here on Fallen Angels. It begins in a small way on the LP's following track, Maybe You'll Be There, as we hear a violin introduced into the soundscape. It's the tiniest of shifts, but it's enough to signal this won't be a reprise of the last outing. Although we do have some brass reminiscent of Shadow in the Night's closer, That Lucky Old Sun. This takes over from the violin pretty sharpish in the song's infancy, and unusually, there's no drums on the track.
Each time I see a crowd of people, just like a fool I stop and stare. It's really not the proper thing to do, but maybe you're
The rhythm guitar and the double bass keep time on the song, and it makes for a nice arrangement without it. So much so you hardly notice the lack of drums at all. It also highlights Bob's voice, which is in fine form. In fact, I go so far as to say this is one of the best performances of the entire era.
It's not the time or place to look for you, but maybe you'll be there.
The song's story is a classic lovesick tale that we've come to expect from the genre. All the tropes are thrown in. There's an absent love, there's a confessional tone, a midnight hour is mentioned. But despite being a little generic in the lyric department, I love the words. Bob sings, "Each time I see a crowd of people, just like a fool, I stop and stare. It's really not the proper thing to do, but maybe you'll be there. I go out walking after midnight, along the lonely thoroughfare. It's not the time or place to look for you, but maybe you'll be there." As we saw in the previous episode of this podcast, these words feel similar to words that Dylan has written himself. The more he covers these songs, the more you can hear their influence in his work. In fact, for me, those couple of verses sound like lost words from his famous Red Notebook during the Blood on the Tracks sessions. They're not too dissimilar to something like, "He hears the ticking of the clocks and walks along with a parrot that talks, hunts her down by the waterfront docks where the sailors all come in. Maybe she'll pick him out again. How long must he wait? One more time for a simple twist of fate." Track 3, Polka Dots and Moonbeams, builds on the album's variety as we're gifted a jazz-leaning song with a lead guitar line that ever so slightly nods to a country sound. This version is quite a major departure from the song's origins. The music here is by Jimmy Van Heusen and lyrics are by Johnny Burke. The song was published in 1940. It was Frank Sinatra's first hit recorded with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. Again, it's a pretty happy song. It centres round a man bumping into a pug-nosed woman, as Anna Rater describes her. This all happens at a country dance. He dances with her despite some objection from the crowd and they go on to fall in love. It ends kind of happily ever after. The final verse is, "Now in a cottage built of lilacs and laughter, I know the meaning of the words ever after. And I'll always see polka dots and moonbeams when I kiss the pug-nosed dream." The story is short and sweet. So much so that we spend the first half of the track listening to essentially an instrumental, just like we do on the original. It has a nice temperature though, as it kind of moseys along. These sonics make for the album's first proper sonic move away from the previous records. This sound would have never happened on Shadows in the Night.
And all I would see, polka dots and moonbeams, when I kiss the pug-nosed dream.
And neither would track 11. During the album's initial release, some voiced disappointment at this song, but personally speaking, I quite enjoy that old Black Magic. I mean, for a start, it actually manages to register some tempo. It's probably the most upbeat thing we've had so far in this era, something we'd see continued on the Triplicate album, the preceding record to this one. Dylan's voice is once again in fine form, and we find some more flamboyant sonics. I mean, flamboyant for these LPs. We start with a little rattle on the cymbal from George Rosselli, which sets the tone. This then gives way to a proper guitar riff, another rarity. Just under a minute in, it sounds like everyone is having fun.
A flame with burning desire, that only your kiss can put out the fire. You're the lover I have waited for. You're the mate that fate had me created for. And every time your lips beat mine, baby, down and down I go, round and round I go, in a spin, loving the spin I'm in, under that old black magic called love.
I love the inner spin lines. It just sounds like the band are enjoying themselves, indulging a little. If you can't indulge yourself at this point on a covers album, then when can you? Once again, the lyrics aren't as heavy as the themes on the previous collection of songs. Don't get me wrong, this is not a sunbeam of never-ending joy, but these lines celebrate love and everything that comes with it rather than feeling jilted by it. Arguably, the biggest shift on the LP isn't actually a sonic one. Despite track 5 Skylark sharing some similar tones to Polka Dots and Moonbeams, it's an anomaly. It's the only song here not recorded by Sinatra.
Skylark, have you anything to say to me? Won't you tell me where my love can be? Is there a meadow in the...
This was written by Hoagy Carmichael for a project to turn the novel Young Man with a Horn into a Broadway musical. After that failed, Carmichael brought in Johnny Mercer to write the lyrics for the song. Mercer apparently struggled for a year to get the lyrics right, but he eventually did, and the song became a hit in 1941 and 1942 for the Glenn Miller Orchestra, for Harry James and his orchestra, and Bing Crosby. Since then, it's been covered with regularity from the likes of Ella Fitzgerald and Tony Bennett and Aretha Franklin and Bette Midler and Gregory Porter, to name but a few. Dylan's take is pretty run-of-the-mill, to be honest. His voice again turns in a good performance. He opts for some brushes on the snare, adding to that jazz undertone of the track, and we're also reintroduced to that lead acoustic guitar sound from Polka Dots and Moonbeams and the violin from Maybe You'll Be There, but it doesn't quite do it for me. Perhaps my judgment is clouded by the fact that the Ella Fitzgerald version is in the same territory as this one, except it pips it to the post in almost every single area. This album's point of difference sonically is reinforced on track 8, On a Little Street in Singapore. We begin with another lengthy musical break, just like the one on the original, and just like that version too, we have a nice bit of bolero rhythm percussion. I love the style choices here. While that sighing riff, if we can call it that, is often played on brass, here on this cut, Dylan opts to play it on, guess what? That's right, the pedal steel guitar, with a lead guitar sliding in the other ear. It just sounds so, so great on this song.
On a little street in Singapore.
This tune was a very early song for Sinatra. He cut it with the Harry James Orchestra in 1939. It's so old, in fact, Sinatra sounds young and a little inexperienced. Unusually for him, he doesn't dominate the song. Well, not completely anyway.
The hands that held me in embrace.
It's a quick tune that doesn't outstay its welcome. Dylan is done with it in 2 minutes and 15 seconds. That bolero undertone I mentioned plays into the song's riff and its slightly odd melody, odd in a good way. I love its sludgy, sedate nature. Will Freewald, in his 1995 book Sinatra, The Song Is For You, A Singer's Art, wrote the recording of this song finds Sinatra and James, quote, making like two American sailors in a Far East opium den. That's the perfect description for me. It's almost hazy, this song, but not in a blissful 60s kind of way with sunshine and marijuana. It's a bit washed out. It's slumped and heavy-eyed. It's frayed around the edges. While I don't think this is the best cover in the world, this for me is yet another example of how this album is at its best when it's not repeating the previous LP. Sadly, that doesn't happen enough. It Had to Be You sees us return to the staples of this era. There's a clean lead guitar, a pedal steel guitar, obviously, an acoustic bass, and a low to middling tempo. I like the song and I like this version, but in the context of this era, we've just heard it all before.
For nobody else gave me a thrill. With all of your faults, I love you still. It had to be you, wonderful you. It had to be you.
We just heard Dylan sing the line, nobody else gave me a thrill. And this is the issue with this song for me. It's a lovely take. The instrumentation is handled brilliantly and it's played very well, but it neither gets the blood pumping nor the hairs rising. This song took a while to become a Frank Sinatra tune. While he performed it in the 40s, he didn't record it until 1980 and his album trilogy, Past, Present and Future. Although listening to it, you'd find it difficult to place this song in any decade. Its production is so conservative. The only giveaway is that Frank's voice is a little more baritone on this one compared to his early recordings. The tune itself was first published in 1924 and has a history worthy of 20 songs. It was featured in Annie Hall and When Harry Met Sally and a plethora of other less enjoyable rom-coms, and it's been recorded by the likes of Doris Day and Bing Crosby and Ray Charles and Barbara Streisand. By the time we launch into the album's next song, we hit a wall of fatigue. Melancholy Mood has all of the above. It's exceptionally played, the guitars from Stu Kimball and Dean Parks are great, it's enjoyable, and it has a nice tone, not to mention another great Dylan vocal, but it's just void of that magic that some other songs possess.
Gone is every joy and inspiration. Tears are all I have to show. No consolation. All I see is grief and gloom. Till the crack of doom. Oh, melancholy mood.
I think why I feel this way about these songs is there's just no climax. Obviously, I'm not expecting a face-melting solo or a sweeping chorus or a seemingly unattainable high note. They're often just cheap tricks. But these songs just don't measure up to other Dylan covers. It's like the difference between Daniel Day-Lewis in Gangs of New York and Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood. They're both full of quality, they're both from a consummate performer, but only one takes the highest award. It's the same for Dylan, these aren't bad cuts, they're just not the best. On a side note, I rewatched There Will Be Blood last night. Can you tell? It just feels like on this LP, despite some diversions, we're stuck on the same track. While the songs don't sound exactly alike, there's just no journey going on this record. Here we are on the first track.
And love is either in your heart or on its way.
And here we are on the album's closer, Come Rain or Shine. We never shake off this tone or texture completely.
Unhappy together and woe.
While Fallen Angels isn't a write-off by any means, it suffers from second album syndrome. It can't repeat a good idea, but it can't let go of it either. By the time you get to this album closer, the album's attempt to introduce a new sound or some new sonics into proceedings fails to elevate it to a whole new plane. Rather than building on Shadows in the Night's strong identity, it dismantles it and dilutes it. It's a little wishy-washy. It tries to rehash and move on at the same time, and it doesn't work. After this record, Dylan felt he still had more to say in this era. In fact, a lot more to say, and he'd say it on a triple album. But would he find a new sound to voice in this period, or would he stick with the current one? That's something we look at next time. That is it for this episode. If you want to talk about it or the album in question, you can do. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bob Dylan Podcast. Oh, can you do me a favor as well? If you have been enjoying the podcast recently and you haven't done so yet, can you rate and or review it? It really helps out, especially on the Apple Podcast app. They're obsessed with ratings and reviews. And we've had less than we did a couple of weeks ago. So when you get 5 minutes, if you have been enjoying the show, feel free to give it a review. As I always say, anything above 4 stars, more than welcome. Anything else, we'll just leave it. Agree to disagree. Next time, we're looking at the third and final album from this era, Triplicate. So join me for that. In the meantime, thank you once again for listening, and goodbye.
A Fueled by Coffee production.